Sometimes it can come as a bit of a surprise to discover something about someone we know or perhaps only have heard about. For Holly Martins, he had rather a shock, as if you watched a film, you will discover. I want to tell you a story that was told by my good friend Joseph, who died a few years ago. I've mentioned Joseph to you before. He was an Austro-Hungarian baron. He came from a Jewish family, and he was imprisoned by both the Nazis and by the communists. His family traditionally had always been jewelers. His grandfather, in fact, had been the crown jeweler to the Habsburg monarchy. And he told me a story that his grandfather had told him. He couldn't remember how generations there were behind, but what Joseph's family was in Budapest. But some generations before, they had lived in Vienna. And he said to me that this particular great, however many great grandfathers it was, one day was very, very excited because his first grandchild had been born. And he decided he was going to have a party. He went along the street, knocking on the doors, inviting everybody to it. They went and got lots of food and lots of wine, and they started celebrating. They pulled chairs and tables out into the street and so on. After this had been going for some time, the man looked up and saw that there were two strangers standing at the corner of the street, both of them quite tall, both of them dressed in very long cloaks, which went right down to their boots. Didn't know who they were, but they looked out of place in the Jewish ghetto of Vienna. So he went over to them and he said, "Friends, I don't know who you are, but we're all celebrating today the birth of my first grandchild. Why don't you come and join us? Eat and drink and join in everything. Be my guests." And so they did. The day went on and they ate and they drank and they started joining the songs that people were singing, but eventually evening came and the two men stood up to go. So the old man went over to him and he said, "I want to thank you very much for coming. I don't know who you are, but you've added something to our celebrations." One of the men stepped forward and he reached into his pocket under the cloak and he brought out a fob watch made of solid gold encrusted with jewels. And he said, "I want you to give this to your grandson as a gift for his birth." And the man looked at him and said, "Well, I can't accept such a wonderful gift. How can I?" He said, "No, please, I insist. Well, can you at least tell me the name of his benefactor so that I can tell my grandson when he's old enough?" And he brought his cloak back and he was wearing court dress. And he said, "Tell him an emperor gave the watch to your grandson." And he suddenly realized this was Emperor Franz Joseph. He was a man who ruled lands which stretched from Switzerland to Poland to Russia to the Baltics. But it was his habit, apparently, to go out quite frequently and sit in a pub or in a restaurant or at the corner of a square and listen to what people were saying so that he could pick up the mood and the wishes of his people. You can imagine the man bowed very low and thanked him for this gift. He didn't know who it was who visited him that day. He just seemed to be an older man in a cloak. But he was the emperor. He got a surprise that day. I asked Joseph, "What happened to the watch?" He said, "I asked my grandfather the same question. Nobody knows." Gosh, I'd love to have seen it, wouldn't you? Sometimes we think we know someone well, and then we encounter a different side of them. What Paul is talking about in Philippians is very much like this. You see, Paul was writing from prison to the church in Philippi, which, unlike many of the churches that he had a lot to do with, was not based on a Jewish community. There wasn't a Jewish community in Philippi. It was at the end of the Roman Empire, the eastern borders. And the people who settled there, they were Roman citizens by right, because Philippi was a Roman city. But in the Roman Empire, they had a custom which was, if you had been a soldier in the Roman army, it didn't matter whether you were Roman or not, but when your time came to retire, you would be given land and a house and a pension, and you could live out the rest of your days, hopefully in peace. And Philippi was one of the places that they settled the retired Roman soldiers. It was a bit like Aldershot, I suppose. Except that this was right on the border of the empire. And so there was very good sense in retiring all these ex-soldiers at the edge of the empire, because if anybody dared to try and attack, you'd already got a retired army sitting in place. These were the people who made up the congregation. They didn't have the benefit of the Jewish scriptures. They didn't have the benefit of the traditions or the teachings that could point to the coming of Jesus. They were Gentiles. We don't know how they became Christians. But they had lots to learn. And so Paul was saying, look, you may have heard all sorts of things about Jesus, but let's get one thing clear. And then he goes through this amazing description of how he says, yes, Jesus was man, but he wasn't just man, he was God, being in very nature God. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place, and so on and so forth. He was reminding them, this is who he really is. Maybe you haven't quite caught hold of that. Now, many of us, myself included, often talk to Jesus as a friend. And we have that hymn, don't we? What a friend we have in Jesus. There's nothing wrong with that. But we mustn't lose sight of the fact that he is also the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. There is this element, this very powerful side to Jesus that we cannot forget or we cannot dispense with. If we do that, we lose the heart of the gospel. This is he whom we worship. And Paul says, he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. He came in the form of a human being in order to live amongst us. A bit of like the Emperor Franz Joseph. But to do more, to teach, to give an example, to heal, to touch the lives of people around, and then to go to the cross and the resurrection. This is the Jesus whom we worship. And sometimes we encounter facets of the lordship or the personality of Jesus that perhaps take us by surprise. There's a wonderful passage in one of C.S. Lewis's books. I'll refer to C.S. Lewis again in a moment, where one of the characters is stroking Aslan the lion, who's a picture of Jesus, and she says, yeah, you're very soft. And Aslan says, yes, but I'm still a lion. It's very important to remember that. But as we discover more about the reality of Jesus, as we come closer to him, don't we discover more about ourselves? And frankly, the church spends most of its time talking about stuff that most people aren't interested in and is largely irrelevant. But one thing that we can give to the world is this. We can say lots of people are worried about identity, who they are, where they've come from, where they're going to. Do they matter? Identity is one of the key things that the generations that we live amongst worry about. Isn't it time the church turned round and said, we can tell you all about identity? Because when you come to know God through Jesus, you discover who you are. Yes, you may have faults and failings and fears. Yes, you may look at yourself and think, oh, good grief. How have I been spending my life? But that's not how God looks at us. He looks at us as how we should be as well as how we are, of what we can become. And through Jesus, he gives us the opportunity to come into relationship with him. What matters is not how other people see us. What matters is not how we see ourselves. It's how God sees us. And God sees us as the beloved sons and daughters of his kingdom for whom his son was prepared to die. That makes us special. That makes us precious. That makes us something that the angels must stand in awe of. We are the people who count to God so much. How do we know? Because of Jesus. He gives us that identity. So we discover more about ourselves. And I hope that we can encourage other people to come into a relationship with Jesus Christ, to get their lives right with God and discover who they really are. Not who they thought they were, but who they really, really are. It's not easy. C.S. Lewis found that. You may know the story. He was a professor at Oxford, a well-known atheist. And he was asked to write an article for a magazine proving that Jesus was a fraud. He spent a long time researching the article and he ended up writing an article saying Jesus was who he said he was. And he said, when I heard that, I realized, when I read what I had written myself, I realized I couldn't just stand and do nothing in the light of that revelation. What was my answer to him? Was I to ignore who he was and what he'd done? Or was I to say yes to him? And that's what he did. But Paul also talks about something else in the identity of Jesus, and in our identities too. He says that Jesus made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And that this attitude we should hold the same as Jesus did. Earlier on in that passage, he spells it out. In humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Isn't that what Jesus did? He put the interests of other people first. He put the interests of you and me first. And Paul is saying that's what God wants us to do. I find that challenging and provoking, don't you? Because it goes against the grain of human nature. Human nature is to look after ourselves and look after our own, if they're lucky. And what we're told here is something that's radically different. It usurps power structures. It changes the status quo. And you might be surprised or not surprised to know that there has grown up in the last few years a whole theological movement based around this idea of serving other people. It's called kenarchy. Don't worry too much about that. How do we serve other people, not just as individuals, but in structures, in economic structures and political structures? Gosh, it would need somebody a lot brighter than I to try and understand and explain that. But this is the heart that we should share. How is that possible? Again, Paul tells us how. He says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Holy Spirit. He's saying when we become Christians, our spirits mingle with that of God himself. And that's what makes it possible to do things that we find so difficult, like putting others first, like looking to the interests of other people. It doesn't come naturally, but it does to God. And so if we put ourselves into his hand, we find that our life can start to change. I have a friend called Peter Mallock. I'm always telling you about my friends because they're the best examples I can find. Peter Mallock lives in Bratislava, in Slovakia. And I know a lot about Bratislava and Slovakia since 1991, but that's another thing altogether. Peter Mallock is a businessman. He's a wheeler dealer. I've never discovered quite what sort of businesses he's into. Sometimes I wonder if I want to know. To give you an example, once when I was in Bratislava, some years ago, we had a teenage British girl who lost her passport. Somehow, Peter got her across the Austrian border and onto a flight home with no passports. I said to him afterwards, "Peter, how on earth did you do that?" He just gave me a big smile. Maybe I shouldn't ask too many questions. Peter is a committed Christian. And when all the war broke out in Ukraine, and Slovakia has a border just at the eastern edge with Ukraine, he put all his businesses on hold, bought a bus, a coach, and he organized people to fill it with stuff. And three times a week, Peter took a team of people to a church in the western end of Ukraine, full of food and equipment, and then brought it back full of refugees looking for a safe place. That went on week after week after week. His wife hardly saw him. And yet, he decided he would put everything on hold because there was a need he and perhaps nobody else could fulfill. He's still going, actually, about once a week at the moment, although things have died down in the western side of Ukraine, as you know. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's difficult to hear the call. But there are occasions when God asks us, put the needs of other people before yours and act in the same way that Jesus did. And so over the coming days, I hope that you discover more and more about who Jesus is. It's a never-ending discovery. I hope that in doing so, you discover more about who you are and answer questions about your own identity. And that as part of that, all of us might learn to put one another first.